You're listening to The Wheel Life with Kevin and Brittany Williams, off-roading podcast. Off-roading podcast. Brought to you by E3 Off-Road, where everything off-roading gets supercharged. Supercharged. Live from wherever the hell they are, and that could be anywhere, streaming to the world and beyond. With the latest in off-roading news, fun, and facts, head over to e3offroad.com and discover more. And now, here are your hosts, Kevin and Brittany.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the E3 podcast. This is going to be a great segment. I think you guys are going to love our special guest today. And, of course, the topic today is vehicle recovery. However, because of the breadth of knowledge that our special guest has today, we're going to get into some other off-road topics, have some fun, talk about some other things as well. So without any further ado, let me just introduce real quick, Justin Andrews from Factor 55, and he's our special guest today. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Factor 55 in a minute, and then we're definitely going to have Justin talk a little bit as well, because I got to tell you guys, it's one of my favorite companies in the off-road world. I can tell you that I've got a load of their products, and they're just light years ahead of all the other stuff out there. They're a professional company, first class, and they didn't come from the off-road world. They started in like the aerospace and defense industry, and then kind of brought that technology and that quality into our world. So I'll tell you guys more about the stuff I have when we start talking with Justin here. But Justin's been with Factor 55 for quite a while, but more importantly, he's been in our off-road industry for well over 10 years, and he's been with Factor 55 for at least half of that. So he's got a trusted name in the industry. He's an avid Jeep. He's an instructor. He's a diver. He's a musician. He raced the Baja 1000. He's got all kinds of history. So, Justin, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I super appreciate it.
Cool. Let's dig in, because I know we got a ton of stuff going on over here. And first, I just want to kind of get your thoughts on, how'd you even get in the off-road world in the first place? I mean, can you talk us through, how you got to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty fine story, actually. So I had initially been living in Los Angeles. I had moved from Idaho, and my son was living in L.A., and I had moved to Los Angeles for a time, and, took a dive job, was teaching scuba out in Hawaii, and really kind of got into off-roading kind of real late in life. I mean, compared to some, I've talked to a lot of people where they've either grown up with it, their dad had a Jeep, they've all been around mechanics or that kind of stuff like through their whole lives. And so I kind of got into it, like I think right before I turned 30, and I finally moved back to Idaho and I bought a Jeep and was like, I thought, man, I'm just going to take the doors off and take the roof off. I'm going to go camping. It's going to be like this cool thing. And I had no idea, what that world even would look like, and was still like so fresh and so new to that. And so one of the things I tell people all the time is like, I still remember the first time I would like air down tires, like headed a trailhead.
Exactly.
Airing down that first time. And I had met a dude off of the Jeep forum that showed me some local trails, and I mean, like this was, and I know I get to deal with the guy looked like nothing. I just showed up and just met this guy in the middle of the desert, and so it was kind of one of those things where like, I initially had just gotten to think of the idea that, man, I thought owning a Jeep would be cool and I was going to kind of use it. And man, I just had no idea that the whole like lifestyle and the passion that would just, grow and then end up actually doing it, like working in the industry, at that time. So it was really kind of, once I moved back to Idaho and I was kind of looking more for a utilitarian style of vehicle and to have something to be, to enjoy just the backcountry of what, our state has to offer, is what really initially got me into it. And then I had a really good friend of mine named Bryson who had grown up with Jeeps and that kind of thing. And he was like, oh man, you got one of those JKs, like they, because they were still pretty new at the time. He was like, let's go see what this thing can do. And we got it out and got it stuck in the mud and like, just like total ridiculousness. So it was really baby steps, like learning everything I could about it, along the way. And then being kind of isolated now when I look back on it, like being, we're in an isolated place here. Boise is kind of like this interesting little community and in town, and we have so much great access to BLM land that it was a really interesting growth process, you know, through getting into off-road. So that's kind of how it all started, with, you know, just interested in having a vehicle to get into the backcountry, and then finding guys that were already kind of actual like Jeep enthusiasts, and then kind of just built off of there, you know. So
yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, it's funny you said that, because it's, you know, like, we all kind of have our own little stories like that. And, you know, I try to encourage people to, you know, just go find a trail, go do a little bit, just go experience a little, and then you end up meeting people like what you said, and then you kind of get a little more, you get sucked in like a sport, and it's just, it's a lot of fun from that point forward. But, you know, you said something else too about like getting stuck in the mud and all that. And I know this topic, our today's podcast, is really around vehicle recovery. And boy, was I kind of a dummy when it came to vehicle recovery when I first got into off-roading, and I didn't really appreciate, you know, how important it was, even just to know the fundamentals and the basics. And I think a lot of people just get, you know, there's misconception that's, oh, but I'm not really doing that hardcore stuff, I'm not going way out there, so I'm not going to need it. I'm not it. But, you know, it's more than just for you needing it, but just your ability, you know, to be part of the community and to help other people as they need it, and just to have enough basic knowledge even. And I know that we're doing some courses together, which I'm really excited about, of like advanced kind of recovery, but just even some of that basic knowledge, just how to hook up or how to, you know, some stuff. But what, I mean, what in your industry and your knowledge, I mean, what are some of the common myths kind of about vehicle recovery that you've seen out there?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. I think, you know, I think that so many things about that are just, I think a lot of people have just learned techniques from either just reading online or from, you know, meeting up with a guy who's got some kind of trail wheeling experience. And with Jeeps specifically, right, it's interesting because, you know, there's been a real misconception that if you winched up through the trail, you didn't drive the trail, right? And there's been this constant common thing for people that really puts this negative thing on the winching. And for me, I've always said, well, man, it's like, well, why would I be spending $1,000 to put a tool on the front of my vehicle that I don't want to use? Doesn't even make sense to me. So a lot of it is you know, some of the things that we see is, you know, the biggest one is guys just taking the toe strap and throwing it over top of the ball hitch on a rear receiver. That is a huge no-no.
I've seen it.
Like, oh my God, you never want to do that. You know, I mean, and the thing is what happens, what you typically find is somebody will do one thing one time, and just because it worked that one time, they'll continue to go back to that thing. It's just like anything else, right? And as us as even as human beings, like, we want to do something that's easy. And if we do something that's easy, we're going to continue doing that easy thing instead of taking the extra steps to do maybe what is the right thing. And so I think that's the biggest thing that we find. You know, because even when you're looking over top of people's gear, or number two thing I see is always when you need the winch. And I ask people this all the time, like, well, where's your winch controller at? Oh, it's in the bag in the back. Well, that doesn't really help me when your vehicle's at a 70-degree pitch and I'm trying to get you over an obstacle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you should have your controller yep. ready to go, and equipment ready to be accessed for if and when you're going to need that. And so many people, you know, it's like, I think those are two of the biggest ones. I think, you know, like, there's just so many simple ways to do it. And I kind of take that kind of approach and the mentality when it comes to vehicle recovery, kind of even out of like the scuba stuff, you know, even from teaching scuba. I mean, there are millions of ways that you can, you know, be harmed underwater, but there's only a handful of ways that you can, you know, save your own life. Right. So it's almost the same thing with your vehicle. I mean, there's millions and millions of situations that you can get into. But really, if you just have some of the just key basic ideas, those things will keep you so much safer and around you so much safer out on the trail.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to throw something after you, because you hit it. And, you know, nowadays with all the new technology and stuff like that, like, I'm running it's a Warren Zeon it's a 14.5 with the remote, like the wireless remote. And then there's that whole conversation out there. Oh yeah, when it doesn't work, call me, that kind of stuff. And people like the levers and all that. I mean, what's your thoughts on that now? Because I know nowadays with newer technology, it seems to be becoming a little more accepted to have the wireless ones now.
Yeah, you know, I really have kind of taken an approach from, especially seeing what's going to be put in the, you know, and the same thing even with our brand, right? Seeing what's going to be put at, through the most amount of abuse and what seems to be, you know, what lasts the longest. So we do a lot of stuff for our test platform through we sponsor tech for King of the Hammers. And so with watching all these guys, especially in the racing aspect, I mean, these guys have to winch. Right. They have to get into a position where we're doing that. And especially like the European, like race winches and all these other things that you see all over the world. I mean, there's such a different kind of thing that people are using their winches for everywhere. And so what's going to work best in those situations? And I think for the most part, I mean, you know, as long as you're in access to that or familiar with the gear, because I think the thing with the platinum winch for me or any of those types of features is like, you know, understanding the access of how to make sure you're syncing the remote to get to have it, you know, activate the in and out, and your free spool and all that stuff with your winch. Like it's people buy it and think, oh, it's the best. And then they just don't even mess around with it. Like they're like, I'm never going to use the thing. You know, I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to that, where some, you know, winches are simple. And, I think that they, a lot of people really just need to spend more time with their equipment. It's just like the same thing. We've talked to a lot of guys with shocks. Shocks is a perfect, another great thing, right? Where, I mean, you can buy over the counter shocks and that right out of the box and put them on your Jeep and they can drive great. But man, if you take just, if you put a little bit of tuning to that shock, it will perform so much better. And a winching is no different. You know, you buy a great winch, but man, you need to really kind of get in there and kind of play with it a little bit and understand it a little bit better. And then all of a sudden you will just do everything that you need to do performance wise.
Yeah, definitely. Those little things, even like tensioning it when you knew if you're on synthetic, all that stuff. And, you know, a big one that I see people when they have the wireless ones is not charging it when you know when you're going wheeling that day. And then you go to need it and, oh, it's dead. Can you wait 20 minutes while I charge my remote? Hey, they're cool. I love the wireless, but it just adds another little checklist to my, you know, my pre-wheeling checklist, so to speak.
No, absolutely. It'd be the same thing even if you're prepping to go surfing, right? You're going to, you know, spend the night and you want to get in the mindset, like wax your board, get ready to go. Like it's the same kind of deal. You know, you want to make sure that, hey, I got my recovery bag. I got the stuff I'm going to need. I got my gloves ready and I got my stuff accessed. And we get more into that stuff later, but you know what I mean? It's being prepared and ready to go whenever you get out there for sure.
Yep. Just like any sport, no doubt. All right, so I get out there, I'm wheeling, and I find myself in a situation that, all right, now I got to start winching, either myself or somebody else. What would you say are some of the common roadblocks to watch out for that most people just don't know?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it, I would say that one of the key things is where they're going to attach to a vehicle and then where their vehicle is placed. You know, I've had an experience where I've had guys off camber in a weird position and thinking like, oh, well, I'm in a good spot here. I'm just going to start pulling on the winch from this point. You can see almost instantly that, you know, you're making zero progress. And it's sometimes you have to reposition your vehicle or reposition the winch line to do better, to perform better, right? And to make the recovery even easier. So it's really about like, you know, one of the things that we talk about even in our basic guide to winching manual. You want to stop and you want to think about what you're doing before anything. You want to take a moment and, you know, it's never be something that you rush through. And so many other people, I think, get so nervous because especially nowadays where the vehicles, especially the JLs, the JTs, the JKs, I mean, you're putting so much money in the vehicle and most people are still daily driving those rigs. And so it's a real, you know, it's a real big concern because it's your car. Right. And like, you don't want to like just break your vehicle. Right. So a lot of people want to rush through that because they just think, okay, well, I got to get out of the situation. I'm in a bad place. And I got to get out of it. Instead of like, man, if you slow down and you really take your time and look at it, then you really prevent dangerous things from happening. So a lot of those things are like putting a winch line damper on the winch line, just in case the rope breaks, you know, and keep any kind of rigging tackle from flying around. Really kind of a, you know, even digging the tire out just a little bit, stacking rocks underneath the tires to help a vehicle get over an obstacle. I mean, usually it's pretty simple stuff, that people just avoid these steps because they're not, you know, they're getting too far ahead of themselves and just, oh, it's going to be simple. We're going to recover and just get them out of here. Instead of just slowing down, and taking a minute and breathing, you know, breathing through that and like, and really thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Take your time. Think about it. Yeah, that's a key thing. You know, it's funny. I was just in the San Hollow area this summer, and I went to Tocqueville Falls there. I'm not sure if you know that area, but we're heading up there, and I see a line of trucks. I'm like, oh boy, something happened up ahead. And so I walk up there, and of course it's, you know, a couple of Jeep rentals. So they had rental Jeeps, and one guy kind of went off the side of the road. So, I mean, he didn't tip it or anything. It's just off the side, and just kind of at a 45 degree hanging off the side. And, you know, the other guy's up there, and they've got these, you know, yellow tow lines from Home Depot. And I walked up there, and they're just about, you know, they have it wrapped up like on the front bumper of the Jeep off the road, wrapped around the bumper and to the trailer hitch of the Jeep that's up on the road. And in like an A-frame kind of form, I'm like, oh boy, nothing good can come from this. So I walked up to him and said, hey guys, you know what? I got a winch. You know, we can winch you up, take it nice and slow, pull the obstacles, be okay. He said, oh, no, no, we got it. So the guy gets in the car that's going to pull it, and he floors it. And the both of them are bouncing back and forth, and the front of the bumper on one side pulls off the Jeep. They tear the wheel off the left side of the Jeep right off the rim. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I sat there and watched the whole thing. And it's like, people just don't think, they don't realize, they don't understand, you know, what's going to happen. So just a nice slow winch and controlled, and it'd be so much better. But you know what? One of the ones I want to throw at you, and I kind of, you know, so I'm a pilot. I'm a scuba diver as well and stuff. So one of the things that I see out there a lot that people don't think about is safety. You know, these winches aren't invincible, especially with people that don't maintain their equipment or check it every season. Or, I mean, these things break, they snap, things happen. You know, ball hitches, when they do what you said, aren't on there good, and they snap and come back. And, you know, I've seen people winching where they've got their kid just standing there in front of the winch, you know, flipping the switch, and that thing's tensioning up. And, you know, I tell you, that's one of the biggest roadblocks to me, because if I'm doing any kind of this stuff and we get hooked up and we're ready to start pulling, first thing I do is make sure nobody's even close to it. I mean, what are some of the safety tips you can kind of talk about when it comes to that?
Yeah, so we cover, and those are all great points. And I think that, you know, a lot of it is, you know, even it will come even from like the YouTube stuff, right? Like a lot of people just watch a video of something and just think that, oh, okay, well, I get it, and I'm just going to go out and do that. But instead of even just even unrolling the equipment, or even keeping if you got a long flat strap, like keeping the strap like without having twists in the strap and making sure that it's flat, like, right? Like if you're going to tie down a vehicle to a trailer, like you don't want your tie downs to be all bound up and twisted all weird. There's no difference in applying that same type of care, especially when you're just trying to flat tow a vehicle or recover a stuck vehicle in a situation like that. So, I mean, really when it comes to like safety tips, you know, we really go off of like the basis of like, which is this in the back of our basic guide to winching manual as well. But it's our, what we call the STOPA checklist. We co-authored this manual with Bob Wallers of the Off-Road Training Safety Academy. And as we've worked with him, the STOPA checklist, which is in the back of our manual, you know, it stands for stop, think, observe, plan, and act, right? So you want to stop and like review that situation. You want to think about what's going on through there. Observe the area around you. Make sure that people are clear of the winch lines, clear of the vehicles, in positions where nobody could get hurt if something were to let go. And then you know, devise that plan of how that's going to happen. Who's going to be in charge, right? There, how many spotters can be on a trail, right? You should have one guy like, directed. Not everybody can captain the ship, you know what I mean? And then yep. Of course you want to act out that plan. You want to put it into action, and then make sure that you know, everybody's following the plan that you put in place. So a lot of that is really just staying clear of the vehicles, staying out of the anywhere for where the winch lines can recoil, you know, especially with like dynamic and kinetic pulls. You find that a lot with especially a lot of big truck guys or guys that are totally into mud and doing those types of things. So there's, you know, you always want to survey that scene and make sure that, you know, everybody's clear and before anything is going to get acted out before any action is taken.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I'm going to shift off of recovery for a second and talk about your advice for people getting into, like, I guess not just off-road in general, but because I know there's, you know, our audience, there's a couple of different types of people. We have people that are just getting started. They're just getting their vehicle. They want to get started. But then we also have people that are, you know, been doing it a little bit more, but they want to kind of take it to the next level. I mean, you being in the industry as long as you have been, I mean, what kind of advice could you give these people that want to get in the off-roading world?
You know, I think the biggest thing is to maybe really start to look at what, you know, what is the purpose that you're building your vehicle for. I think that that really is the one of the key points before you decide to really do invest your money in certain areas. You know, and if I could go back and think about that, you know, when it first started, I think that I would have really have, you know, started to think about, okay, well, am I just going to go have fun and go trail wheeling every so often? Or is it going to be like, you know, am I going to go once a month? Am I just going to go every couple of weeks? Am I going to go every weekend? You know, and there was a time where, I mean, it was literally like every weekend that I was out on the trail. And so I think that the biggest thing is to always, you know, it's like anything else. I mean, where do you want to do that, right? You want to buy once, cry once, right? You want to, like, no, you don't want to keep just rebuying equipment and doing stuff over and over and over again, because that's a fool's errand at some point. You want to make sure that you kind of devise your plan together of what it is that you're trying to achieve. Like, if you just are going to go overlanding with your family, maybe kind of get into the hard stuff a little bit later on. Like, that's one aspect. If you're just going to hit the duck blind or go hunting and, you know, you got a truck that's just going to be mildly set up for just light off-road use, I mean, that's another aspect. If you want to get into, like, badass rock crawling and that's all you want to do, then you want to make sure that you start putting together, okay, well, these are the key things that I need. I need to upgrade my suspension, my shocks, my bigger axles, right? It's all of those things. So I think putting a plan together, you know, especially, you know, for what the purpose is that you're trying to gain out of the vehicle, I think is one of the key things that I see a lot of people just jump in and just start buying accessories. And then all of a sudden they just end up with all kinds of things that they don't need that end up getting in their way. Right. I mean, like, if you're going to carry your high lift jack with you, like, you want to find out, then you start thinking about how you're going to utilize that jack and where you're going to mount it. Like, man, I had a high lift on my Jeep for years and started out with the mount where it stood up next to the front door. I had one of those, and then it rattled like crazy and got caught on tree limbs and bushes and all kinds of things. And man, it almost just totally damaged the whole front fender of my Jeep from catching it on rocks on the trail, versus where it ended up that I ended up welding two tabs and mounting it off the tire carrier where it finally stopped rattling around and was in a convenient place if I needed it. Right. So really, I think that it's just such a headache, man, you know, going back and forth, that kind of stuff. And I think sometimes it's just best to just, you know, ask around, ask your local shop, ask somebody that's been there. You know, if you got some serious questions, I mean, there's just there's a plethora of information that's available online. Right. So it's definitely making a plan about what's going on would probably be my strongest advice when first getting into it.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, one of the reasons that E3 and all the different industries even started, you know, because E3 stands for empower, educate, entertain. And one of the missions for E3 was to bring vetted, you know, responsible information and training in these different industries like off-road and firearms and overland and all that, which is why we have people like you, which we appreciate. So, you know, I want to hit two things on here. One is, you know, because you do talk about there's all this stuff out there on YouTube, there's all this information, but boy, there's a lot of noise, and some of the stuff to me is just plain dangerous. It's just irresponsible, some of the stuff out there. I mean, what are some ways that, you know, people that are getting into these industries can feel good about the kind of the information you're getting, or how do you vet it if you're not in like an E3 association? And then the second question is, tell us about your rig, like what you get on your rig and how you're set up. But let's hit that first one about like all the noise out there in the industry.
Yeah. So a lot of it is, you know, and we talk about this, but this is taken from like the aspect of the products that we make for the military and for law enforcement, fire departments, that kind of thing. So we have something where, you know, that has real life safety that's involved in that and correct working load limits and all these things. So, you know, there in off-road, there is no regulation. And that's where the same thing when it comes to just even like the basis of even our product line, right, with the Winchline shackle mounts. You know, hooks in that sense, where they were designed for overhead lifting. They were designed to where the load would always stay centered in the throat of a hook for vertical lifting. They were never designed for pulling. And because of that, that's the reason why people can get in dangerous situations, even with something that, you know, that's been on the front of the vehicle for years and years and years. So I think that, in order to get around some of the noise that's out there online like that, is, because again, this goes back to like, you know, I've seen a guy do it once like this, so that means I should be able to get away with it every time, right? It goes back to that same thing. I think that some of the key things are manufacturing. When it comes to vehicle recovery, if it's made in America, you're already off to a great start. Like all of our products have to have all the proper working load limits, all of the minimum braking strengths listed on that. They all have to have, safety factors built into every single product, because we sell them to the military, right? And so they have to have, we have to prove all that test data for all of our government contracts and for all of those things. And so really it's starting to look at like asking the question, like, why is this like the best? And really, you know, why is it worth that investment? And why can I buy a tow strap at Home Depot for $30 and buy yours and it's 80? Like what's really the value that you're gaining there? And so I think a lot of people need to really, you know, that's a thing I wish I would have known, you know, way ahead of time, and I would have bought way less equipment that I ended up just throwing away or just using for garage projects instead of actual for, you know, full vehicle recovery in that sense. So really it's I think manufacturing is a big thing, where it's made, how it's made, what kind of testing those companies are doing. I think that a lot of the bumper companies are even started to do that kind of thing where you're seeing them go like, you know, showing tests of their powder coating, how they can hold up in car crashes and all stuff. And I mean, there's just so much unregulated equipment that's available online that you really want to be careful. And I think that, you know, just starting out with just manufacturing is a really great place to look, especially if you're new to this.
You're listening to The Wheel Life with Kevin and Brittany Williams, off-roading podcast.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, and I've made that mistake too. And, you know, so many people run down the Harbor Freight and buy a ratchet strap. And after you've had to buy one over and over for 4 years because they all rusted out and broke, you could have just bought a Factor 55 strap and you still have it for 10 years. And, but more importantly, it's, to me, there's certain things that I might try to be a little less expensive on. But when it comes to safety or something that your life has to depend on, that's the stuff I don't really skimp on. So, for sure. What's your rig setup like now?
So I have a 2008 two-door Rubicon JK Jeep. It's stretched. It's got a rock crawler X-Factor 3-inch stretch, 3.5-inch lift, Raceline beadlocks, BFG KO2 37s. I got Radflow shocks, and I have a Genrite rear tire carrier because I like Jeeps with tire carriers. I like Jeeps with spare tires, right? I just think a Jeep should have a spare tire. So, I got the Genrite tire carrier in the back. I got Savvy off-road, front and rear aluminum bumpers. I have a Warn 8274, winch. That's actually a Jeep special edition winch. So it's actually an 8074. So predates the 8274 a little bit, but it was made in the early 70s. It's got, and it was made, so like when AMC owned Chrysler, you could actually, like when you bought a CJ, you could get this Jeep branded winch that was made by Warn. So I have that up there with a giggle pin winch, free spool, and upgraded motor on it. So the thing just rips, right? So that's pretty awesome. You know, rigid lights, welded in roll cage, the whole thing, you know, I mean, all aluminum armor, from TNT Customs have, stretched, aluminum armor on the fenders, They have an extended rock slider that TNT made for the two-door JK, which is totally badass. Those things are awesome. They're almost like a boat side. All TNT aluminum skid plates underneath the Jeep. And then, you know, like a full rugged radios, race setup. I have the winch wired in, powered in through the S-Pod, the classic S-Pod switch panel in the Jeep. And, you know, I've been outfitted with, you know, and then you got to have like the best things in the world when it comes to the creature comforts. I got spiderweb shade. So when the tops and doors off, you're not getting sunburned out on the trail. Got crawl tunes, speakers in here with a Bluetooth receiver and amp setup. Because what I did is I actually took the rugged radios, race radios, and put them in the dash where the head unit went. So now, you know, you're streaming everything from Bluetooth on your phone, right? So that's why. Yeah, stereo can, you know, the stereo can run from my cell phone, or you can run it through intercom headsets right through the rugged radio setup in the car. Carolina Metal Masters got their custom grab handles with RAM mounts. I'm all over custom. I got the Carolina Metal Masters grab handles to get in and out. That also have RAM ball mirror attachments. Those are probably some of my favorite mods in the Jeep. All high quality USA made stuff there. And, yeah, man, I mean, the thing's just kind of outfitted. So I got the Jeep is, I got a two door, right? So the Jeep is really set up to go rock crawling and really get in the backcountry. And then for the camping setup and for the family, I actually, built a trailer with matching BFG and race lines, and a CVT rooftop tent on the back of it. So kind of get the best of both worlds. You can go rock crawling and do all that stuff, or we can just tow the trailer up and hit the camp spot right on the river. So, I mean, I feel really fortunate, man, to finally, after all these years, to finally get to that place with this Jeep that it's like I've always kind of wanted to be at. The only thing this thing needs now is a new motor.
So basically saying you got a stock Jeep, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Got myself a stock, gold stocker. Tell you what, man, this I got the 3.8 liter in here. This thing's pulling strong at 147,000 miles on this Jeep right now. But it's, you know, one of the newest components actually I recently just got one of those iDrives. It's a little like, it plugs into the top of your pedal, right? So it's a throttle control response thing. I can't believe the improvement in gas mileage and instant power that it gives this, you know, this gutless wonder of a motor that I got in this thing. But, you know, eventually I think, you know, it'll end up going the way, like kind of what Kevin and Brittany did, where they just got the Hemi swap done by our friends and one of our dealers, DCD Customs. I think eventually what I'm going to do is, if it doesn't go with the V8, I'm probably just going to upgrade to, you know, some new drivetrain options at some point. You know, that's the other biggest thing, right? You get involved with Jeeping, you put so much investment into the products and everything else they're going to use. And I'm the same way, right? Like I've got so much money in this Jeep. It's either you just try to sell it to somebody individually to try to start all over again, or you just got to keep going, man. You got to keep upgrading it, right? And so at some point, I think that's what will eventually have to happen. As I'm just lacking horsepower. That's the only thing this thing's lacked in.
Yep, I hear you. How does that iDrive work? Like, what is that connected to, or how does that operate?
So it's this little box, and it just it's a little gauge, and it's got a little 3M backing, so you can kind of place it anywhere around the dash. And then it's a cable, and it literally just like you, with the, you know, newer Jeeps, you unplug the top of the gas pedal, cause it's all fly by wire, right? And then you just plug it in. It plugs into the factory plug, and then you take your factory plug and plug it into the female side of the other end. And the thing just, you know, I mean, the install takes minutes, right? It's more of a pain crawling up underneath there to find out how to get the plug out, but it just literally snaps into place, and then you instantly have all kinds of different throttle control and options, from an automatic sensor setting to their ultimate sensor setting in 9 different variations. I mean, it is really like, I mean, for like the $200 that it costs or something, it's already saved me at least that in gas mileage since I've had one. And to be able to, like, when I step on the gas, instead of having throttle lag, I mean, the thing is just instant, you know, like right off the line. It's unbelievable. It makes the Jeep feel like it has more horsepower, even though I know that it doesn't, right? But it responds a lot quicker. And especially when once you get your gearing right and your axles, and you, I have RTEC trusses on both. I'm just Dana 44s, factory e-lockers, and, you know, the R-Tech trusses on here. And once you are adding all that weight and putting on, you know, bigger tires, man, like, it really helps, you know, move the thing down the road. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's for sure. Cool. So I want to get into some personal stuff because I want people to learn about you a little more, because we've got some courses and stuff coming out, advanced recovery, some basic recovery, and I'd love for people to hear a little bit more just about you. And I mean, what would you say are some of your favorite off-road experiences? And if you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell them?
I think the first thing I would have told myself is to not get so many tattoos and join the military. I think it's the first thing I would have done then. But I think more than anything, I would go back to even my 28-year-old self, when I was first buying a Jeep, and I would have bought that burnt orange LJ that was sitting on the lot that day instead of my two-door Rubicon, because I jumped. Sure. I had that day. That was a tough day. I went down there and went to go buy the Jeep, and they actually had a burnt orange LJ that was sitting on the lot, and then they had my Jeep, my Rubicon, that was there. And dude, I jumped in that LJ and I was like, nah, I don't know, man, this dash, that looks kind of old. I'm going to take the DVD nav over here. And so that was probably the biggest mistake of my whole life right there. Cause I could have a badass LJ at this point. Now they're just now they're hard to even find, right? Especially when you find a good one. So, I think that would be first and foremost, like, the thing I would probably go back in time and tell. But my, you know, some of my favorite off-road memories, I think one of my first ones was, you know, that the first day that I took, I had bought a four-door Sahara, like bone stock, like right off the showroom. And my buddy Bryson, who I mentioned before, took me out on a trail, wheeled around for a little bit. We got stuck in this muddy little area, making some passes, just having all the fun. And I totally had to call my buddy with a big Dodge diesel truck to pull us out, because, you know, we didn't know anything at the time. And you know, I had the thing buried to the frame, and, you know, I was like freaking out, like, man, I just bought the thing and just bought the Jeep and had so much money, you know, I was already paying so much money a month, the car payment, the whole thing. Right. And I was like, you know, that moment of realizing, like, wow, man, like, you really need to do some research and be ready to go to get yourself out of a situation if you're going to play in there. And looking back on it now, like, where are we at even gotten stuck at, which is just kind of, just south of, Boise out here in the desert. Like, geez, man, like, it was not that bad, you know? And had I had just even a set of Max Tracks at the time, we would have been in and out of there in like no time. And it would have been just all the fun. But it was those stressful moments, like, really stick with you like that, to empower you to want to learn, to do better the next time that you go out. And so that was always a really great, you know, that was a great moment. But man, there's just been so many. I mean, like, I remember the first time going to Moab, right? The first time you see the red rock,
and definitely
the first time that you know, I mean, it's just so awe inspiring. It's just, and the word awesome just doesn't even grab just the vastness of that. And, you know, kind of like the first time flying into New York City or the first time seeing the Grand Canyon, right? It's like, it just has those impactful moments on you. Same thing, when we, you know, racing the Baja 1000, the first time that you go through contingency and you see all these cars and that culture and these people and the energy of a place like that. I mean, those moments are, you know, it's hard to describe. Same thing with King of the Hammers. King of the Hammers is just a thrill and a spectacle in its own. And to now be a part of that is also just another, I feel very humbled and honored to work for such a great company and to get to know all the people that we get to know in this industry.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's one of the things we just want to do so much here at E3, is just really empower people to just go out and experience some of these places. It's just, it just adds so much more experience and quality of life. No doubt about it. And there's so many different levels you can do it. Even if it's just an easy trail or a hardcore rock crawl, but just the experience of being out there. So I'm going to hit some fun questions here. So if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why?
Oh man, that is a good one. God. You know, I think that, you know, first and foremost, for me personally, I would say Jacques Cousteau. I think being able to meet him and sit down and talk with that guy would have been really fascinating. I think from an engineering aspect, you know, and really having to have an idea of as we'll let this, especially with my scuba background, that, you know, it still counts as off-road as far as I'm concerned, right? Because you're out on the ocean. I think that from, you know, just how to continue to drive and seek for adventure and go places people had never been before. And I mean, man, the guy invented scuba, right? So it was, I think that that would be fascinating to kind of hear, you know, what those kind of war stories and that kind of stuff would be like. I think that another one, let's see, I think, you know, I would really, I hope at some point, I feel like in the off-road world, I've lucked out and gotten to meet so many of these icons and celebrities there and had so many really great interactions with those people. And so I feel really fortunate in that sense. So for me, I think another one would be, I think meeting or talking to a guy, Dexter Gordon would have been a great one for me. I went to college for music, actually, is what I went to school for. And I played the saxophone. So I think talking to some of these jazz icons and legendary saxophone players like Dexter Gordon, John Coltrane, I think something like that would be really fascinating just to see how their minds work. I think would be probably some of the most interesting kind of meetings that we are, you know, artists in any kind of facet always have some unique thing to offer. Right. And I think that would always be really neat to get to know and to see.
Yep. Yep. So what's like just personally, like what's some of the stuff you're really interested about right now?
You know, like a lot of it for me, especially now that I've gotten, you know, gotten into my later 30s is more of, especially for our industry is trail maintenance, getting involved in your local clubs for trail cleanups, land use. It's a big one, right? Is always to keep up, with, yep. You know, trying to do the right thing, pack in, pack out and, you know, keeping our trails open. You know, I spent a lot of my early 20s doing a lot of rock climbing and mountaineering, spent a lot of time in the mountains. And so, you know, I've seen kind of both sides of it where you have, like here it was, like I came in off-road real late, right? So I was always like the, you know, had these fundamental things of being in the woods and being around animals and doing that stuff. And off-roaders, we really get a bad rap for that, for tearing up the land and burning fossil fuels and going up there and just ripping around in the desert and doing these things. And, you know, I think that a lot of people really need to take, you know, that idea that we're really privileged to get to use and have access to a lot of these areas that we get to go into and to really take care of it and always just do the simple thing of leave it nicer than it was when you got there, you know? And if you find beer cans on the trail, to pick them up. And if you find trash, to throw it in your trail sack and take it out of there, because those are the things that lead to, you know, all these other people trying to shut our access down to that land. You know, like we had recently here in Boise a few years ago, there was a giant fire up in the foothills that was here. I mean, it burned. It was thousands of acres and burned. And it stemmed from a guy on a mountain bike lighting toilet paper on fire from going to the bathroom. And that dude's name was never released to the public. You know what I mean? He was just trying to do the right thing and instead caused this huge wildland fire. But had that been somebody on a motorcycle, had that been somebody on a side-by-side and their exhaust had started that fire? I mean, can you imagine the backlash from something like that? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's about really, like, we're always trying to do the best thing and represent ourselves in the best type of way. And I always think that, and so for me, and now that's always like been a big aspect, right? Is to support those, you know, that are going to these committee hearings and writing to your, you know, senators and congressmen, the whole thing to, you know, to give you access to that land, because, you know, we want to enjoy it in just the same way that anybody else does.
Yeah, definitely. So that would probably take me to my next question. Like, if you could prove anything in the off-road community, what would it be? And it sounds like that's probably one of your passions.
Yeah, man, I really just, you know, that would be number one. I think the other thing is also the, just sometimes is trying to, I think the other thing to help with would be to get people to understand more about what, where they're spending their dollars, especially from the manufacturing aspect. You know, we get asked all the time, like, well, those parts are really expensive. And I'm always like, well, hey man, like, you know, what is the, what is your safety worth, and what's the safety of the people around you worth? You know, like, you know, most winch hooks that come on the ends of winches, for instance, are completely underrated. They have no markings on them. They've never been tested, and you're just relying on the company saying like, oh, that this thing is going to be okay with you to use. You know what I mean? Like, it's more about, you know, a lot of people will cheapen out sometimes where, you know, when, if you just spend a little bit more, you could actually be supporting that mom and pop business, or you could be supporting, you know, dollars that are coming back into American economy, and, you know, really, you know, focusing on, you know, building parts here and buying parts here. I mean, especially for the Jeep world, I mean, you're patriotic enough to buy a vehicle that's built in America. You know, you should also outfit it with some, you know, key components that were also made here too.
Yeah, especially when those components are things that are, you know, they can hurt you, they can save you. I mean, there's some other components in there you really need to think about. It's like diving. Well, you want to spend an extra, you know, again, a $20 octo regulator, and then when you're 65 feet in a reg and your main regulator goes bad, I think you'd be wishing you paid the extra $20. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's, no, 100%. Yeah. And I always thought that was one of those things. That's how I always thought it was a fascinating thing where you had like, man, nothing stopping anybody from just rolling into Cabela's or in a pro shop anywhere and buying a piece of equipment that can move 12,000 pounds of weight around, right? With zero training whatsoever, with no knowledge of how to thing that even works whatsoever, or even the best mounting options to put it on, and you can just roll right out of there and throw it on the front of your truck, right? With no idea of how to use that. And with scuba, like, you can't buy life-saving equipment unless you buy it through authorized dealers to prove to that dealer that you're a certified diver, because you went through the course in order to do that. And so I mean, there's really something to look at in that model, you know, like for saying, hey man, like, you know, we talked to a lot of clubs and a lot of things, and that was like the same thing why we came out with this basic guide to winching manual, because now there's, you know, some kind of frame of reference where, you know, we're just trying to provide a customer service to be like, hey man, here's some good ideas, and this is the way to kind of approach, you know, to go out there and do exactly what E3's mission statement is about, is to empower those people, to give them that knowledge, right? And just, and it goes back to the simple stuff, man, teach a man to fish, right?
Exactly. And I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say the same thing. I mean, part of what we do is to educate and empower. And, you know, we want people to be safe. We want people to enjoy the outdoors. It's a sport. We don't want them to have a bad experience or somebody get hurt and then they have a, you know, bad misconception of the industry and stuff. So we definitely, how we do that is being able to have access to people like you. So we definitely appreciate you coming on and do that. So tell me something, a fun question here I wanted to talk to you about. Like, is there anything that I should have asked you in this podcast that I didn't?
Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I know. I think we're covering a good basis here. I think we're going to get to like the real nitty gritty of a lot of stuff when we are able to release some video content through E3, and to really get the, it's so much easier, man, for hands on. I mean, you can talk to your blue in the face about a lot of stuff. And I mean, I see guys talking about it all the time. And you know, and I think that the basis, I think one of the most beautiful things I ever heard when it came to vehicle recovery was from Nina Barlow of Barlow Adventures. She always said, there's never a textbook recovery. There's never anything that's textbook, right? Every situation is different because of the terrain, because of the vehicles involved and all these things. And so you want to make sure you eliminate as many risks as possible with the equipment that you have available. So that's the reason why guys have just gotten away with using Chinese toe straps, or you know, why guys, you know, oh, we'll just throw it over the ball hitch. Well, you know what I mean? Like, it's all about throttle control, understanding how your vehicle works. I mean, a lot of people have never even taken the time to practice, you know, putting the left foot on the brake and the right foot on the gas and learning how to feather the brake, you know what I mean? To control the jerking motions in the vehicle. Like, sometimes it just takes those simple little things like that. And it's the smallest techniques that sometimes can pay off in the biggest dividends.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I get to tell you, I can't tell people enough, I mean, how much I love like Factor 55 products, because I'm just – for me, when it comes to quality, that's just a big deal to me. What are some of like the newer, or I guess things that they just can't get anywhere? Or tell you what, I'm going to play dummy because I love one of this product you guys got. I want you to tell me about it. And it's like that really strong rope with the ball in the end and the loop, and tell me about it.
So we have last year at SEMA, we were really fortunate to partner up with a industrial marine rigging company out of Houston. And they make stuff, you know, for huge mooring lines for ships and shipping containers, all kinds of things. And so we partnered up with this, you know, this huge industrial marine rigging company in order to manufacture a whole line of high-end soft goods. And so we now make three different versions of soft shackles. So a soft shackle is a replacement for the classic D-ring or screw pin anchor shackle. So we now make our standard duty, our extreme duty 10 inch, and then our extreme duty 20. Out of those three products, the standard duty is just basically basic Dyneema that's got a monkey fist knot at one end and then a noose loop at the other. And so instead of using a pin end of a shackle, you can interface this with any one of our products or around roll cages or anything like that, and then capture the knot through the noose to create kind of a closed attachment. The extreme duties, the two newer versions, have an outer woven sheath on the outside of them, so they're a lot more resilient to dirt, mud, rocks, you know, water from penetrating into the rope fibers. And then we make those in two different lengths. And the 20 inch, the great thing about that is you can actually double that thing up. And when it doubles up, it broke at like 84,000 pounds and it weighs like 10 ounces. I mean, it's unbelievable the strength in these fibers and material. So those are some great products. And then even this year, which you'll see, which we'll be releasing at SEMA, we have a whole new list of parts that we're going to be releasing just in the next 60 days, maybe even some that'll be E3 exclusives. So we have some really cool content that'll be coming that way for all the listeners and for you guys as well, that are all even going to pair with the parts that we even have out now, and give you the most versatile and, you know, trusted and USA-made parts that we can to keep everybody safer out on the trail.
Yeah, definitely. I tell you, I just got to tell everybody, just go find Factor 55 products. Just put them in your hand. Just feel them. You'll notice the difference right away. And you just have a whole new level of confidence when, you know, you're using their products. I love them. I got a whole bunch of your stuff, Justin. So appreciate that. And so what's the best way for people to, I mean, get more exposure to stuff and buy? Is it go to the website, go to dealers? I mean, how should they search out your stuff?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you can pretty much do it all. You know, we have a huge dealer network. We work with a lot of really great build shops, I mean, all over. So you can start with looking in your area if you want to support the local shops and the local business. You know, for sure, you always want to go in there to do that. You can research your parts online at factor55.com, off of our Facebook page, off of our Instagram, any of those, YouTube channel, anything. You know, we're pretty easy and attainable and kind of available everywhere. Worldwide too, we have worldwide distribution. So the parts are kind of, you know, you want to go and spend the money like wherever you feel is right for you, and definitely give us a call at any time because we're always here to answer questions. People are always asking us, you know, the specifics and things with their builds, homemade bumpers, like whatever it might be, you know, like how the parts are going to fit. And so we're always here to do whatever we can to help in any kind of way.
Awesome. So you ship international then, obviously then, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah. We do. You know, we really try to empower our international dealers because it also saves freight for those international customers. You know, but sometimes like some of the parts just aren't available, but we will handle international shipments as well. Yep.
Awesome. Because I mean, we've got members in New Zealand and Australia, Japan, Iceland, Norway. I mean, there's members that are probably listening right now that are in those countries. So, all right, guys, you got to check
That's
it
great.
Out. Justin, I definitely appreciate you coming on and looking forward to, you know, doing more with you, more courses. And we love you guys. We love the company. And I just wanted to thank you. And we'll be signing off.
Head over to www.e3offroad.com to join the fun. You've been listening to The Wheel Life with Kevin and Brittany with E3 Off-Road Association, the next generation in off-roading memberships. Grab your spot now with special discounted pricing for listeners. Just head over to e3offroad.com.